And here she was, Harla Brano, the strongest to rule since the mule's death. She knew that, and only the fifth woman to do so. On this day only had she been able to use her strength openly. She had fought for her interpretation of what was right and what should be, against the dogged opposition of those who longed for the prestige-filled interior of the galaxy and for the aura of imperial power. And she had won. "Not yet," she had said. "Not yet. Jump too soon for the interior, and you will lose, for this reason and for that." And Selden had appeared and had supported her in language almost identical with her own. It made her, for a time, in the eyes of all the Foundation, as wise as Selden himself. She knew they could forget that any hour, however. And this young man dared to challenge her on this day of days, and he dared to be right. That was the danger of it. He was right, and by being right he might destroy the Foundation. And now she faced him, and they were alone. She said sadly, "Could you not have come to see me privately? Did you have to shout it all out in the council chamber in your idiotic desire to make a fool of me? What have you done, you mindless boy?" 6. Trevise felt himself flushing and fought to control his anger. The mayor was an aging woman who would be 63 on her next birthday. He hesitated to engage in a shouting match with someone nearly twice his age. Besides, she was well practiced in the political wars and knew that if she could place her opponent off balance at the start, then the battle was half won. But it took an audience to make such a tactic effective, and there was no audience before whom one might be humiliated. There were just the two of them. So he ignored her words, and did his best to survey her dispassionately. She was an old woman, wearing the unisex fashions which had prevailed for 2 generations now. They did not become her. The mayor, the leader of the galaxy, if leader there could be, was just a plain old woman who might easily have been mistaken for an old man, except that her iron-gray hair was tied tightly back instead of being worn free in the traditional male style. Trevise smiled engagingly. However much an aged opponent strove to make the epithet boy sound like an insult, this particular boy had the advantage of youth and good looks and the full awareness of both. He said, "It's true. I'm 32, and therefore a boy, in a manner of speaking, and I'm a councilman, and therefore ex officio mindless. The first condition is unavoidable. For the second, I can only say I'm sorry. Do you know what you've done? Don't stand there and strive for wit. Sit down. Put your mind into gear, if you can, and answer me rationally." "I know what I've done. I've told the truth as I've seen it. And on this day you try to defy me with it? On this one day when my prestige is such that I could pluck you out of the council chamber and arrest you with no one daring to protest?" "The council will recover its breath, and it will protest. They may be protesting now, and they will listen to me all the more for the persecution to which you are subjecting me." "No one will listen to you, because if I thought you would continue what you have been doing, I would continue to treat you as a traitor to the full extent of the law. I would then have to be tried. I'd have my day in court." "Don't count on that. Amir's emergency powers are enormous, even if they are rarely used." "On what grounds would you declare an emergency?"
"I'll invent the grounds. I have that much ingenuity left, and I do not fear taking the political risk. Don't push me, young man. We are going to come to an agreement here, or you will never be free again. You will be imprisoned for the rest of your life. I guarantee it."
They stared at each other, Brano in gray, Trevise in multishade brown. Trevise said, "What kind of an agreement?"
"Ah, you're curious. That's better. Then we can engage in conversation instead of confrontation. What is your point of view?"
"You know it well. You have been crawling in the mud with Councilman Compor, have you not?"
"I want to hear it from you, in the light of the Selden crisis just past."
"Very well, if that's what you want, Madam Mayor." He had been on the brink of saying, "old woman." The image of Selden was too correct, too impossibly correct, after 500 years. It's the 8th time he's appeared, I believe. On some occasions, no one was there to hear him. On at least one occasion, in the time of Inbor III, what he had to say was utterly out of synchronization with reality. But that was in the time of the mule, wasn't it? But when, on any of those occasions, was he as correct as he was now? Trevise allowed himself a small smile. "Never before, Madam Mayor, as far as our recordings of the past are concerned, has Selden managed to describe the situation so perfectly in all its smallest details." Brano said,
"Is it your suggestion that the Selden appearance, the holographic image, is faked? That the Selden recordings have been prepared by a contemporary, such as myself, perhaps? That an actor was playing the Selden role?"
"Not impossible, Madam Mayor, but that's not what I mean. The truth is far worse. I believe that it is Selden's image we see, and that his description of the present moment in history is the description he prepared 500 years ago. I have said as much to your man Caudel, who carefully guided me through a charade in which I seemed to support the superstitions of the unthinking Foundationer."
Yes. The recording will be used, if necessary, to allow the Foundation to see that you were never really in the opposition.
Trevise spread his arms.
But I am. There is no Selden plan, in the sense that we believe there is, and there hasn't been for perhaps 2 centuries.
I have suspected that for years now, and what we went through in the time vault 12 hours ago proves it.
Because Selden was too accurate?
Precisely. Don't smile. That is the final proof.
I'm not smiling, as you can see. Go on.
How could he have been so accurate? 2 centuries ago, Selden's analysis of what was then the present was completely wrong. 300 years had passed since the Foundation was set up, and he was wide of the mark completely.
That, Councilman, you yourself explained a few moments ago. It was because of the mule. The mule was a mutant with intense mental power, and there had been no way of allowing for him in the plan.
But he was there just the same, allowed or not. The Selden plan was derailed. The mule didn't rule for long, and he had no successor. The Foundation regained its independence and its domination. But how could the Selden plan have gotten back on target after so enormous a tearing of its fabric?
Brano looked grim, and her aging hands clasped together tightly.
You know the answer to that. We were one of 2 Foundations. You've read the history books.
I've read Arcady's biography of her grandmother, required reading in school after all, and I've read her novels, too. I've read the official view of the history of the mule and afterward. Am I to be allowed to doubt them?
In what way?
Officially, we, the First Foundation, were to retain the knowledge of the physical sciences and to advance them. We were to operate openly, our historical development following, whether we knew it or not, the Selden Plan. There was, however, also the Second Foundation, which was to preserve and further develop the psychological sciences, including psychohistory, and their existence was to be a secret, even from us. The Second Foundation was the fine-tuning agency of the plan, acting to adjust the currents of galactic history when they turned from the paths outlined by the plan.
Then you answer yourself, said the mayor. Beta Durell defeated the mule, perhaps under the inspiration of the Second Foundation, although her granddaughter insists that was not so. It was the Second Foundation, without doubt, however, which labored to bring galactic history back to the plan after the mule died, and, quite obviously, they succeeded.
What on Terminus, then, are you talking about, Councilman?
Madam Mayor, if we follow Arcady Durell's account, it is clear that the Second Foundation, in making the attempt to correct galactic history, undermined Selden's entire scheme, since in their attempt to correct, they destroyed their own secrecy. We, the First Foundation, realized that our mirror image, the Second Foundation, existed, and we could not live with the knowledge that we were being manipulated. We therefore labored to find the Second Foundation and to destroy it.
Brano nodded.
And we succeeded, according to Arcady Durell's account. But quite obviously, not until the Second Foundation had placed galactic history firmly on track again after its disruption by the mule. It is still on track.
Can you believe that?
The Second Foundation, according to the account, was located and its various members dealt with. That was in 378 FE, 120 years ago. For 5 generations, we have supposedly been operating without the Second Foundation, and yet have remained so close to target where the plan is concerned, that you and the image of Selden spoke almost identically.
This might be interpreted to mean that I have seen into the significance of developing history with keen insight.
Forgive me, I do not intend to cast doubt upon your keen insight, but to me it seems that the more obvious explanation is that the Second Foundation was never destroyed. It still rules us. It still manipulates us. And that is why we have returned to the track of the Selden Plan.
7.
If the mayor was shocked by the statement, she showed no sign of it. It was past 1 a.m., and she wanted desperately to bring an end to it, and yet could not hasten. The young man had to be played, and she did not want to have him break the fishing line. She did not want to have to dispose of him uselessly when he might first be made to serve a function. She said,
"Indeed. You say, then, that Arcady's tale of the Kalganian War and the destruction of the Second Foundation was false? Invented? A game? A lie?"
Trevise shrugged.
It doesn't have to be.
That's beside the point. Suppose Arcady's account were completely true, to the best of her knowledge. Suppose all took place exactly as Arcady said it did, that the nest of Second Foundationers was discovered, and that they were disposed of. How can we possibly say, though, that we got every last one of them? The Second Foundation was dealing with the entire galaxy. They were not manipulating the history of Terminus alone, or even of the Foundation alone. Their responsibilities involved more than our capital world or our entire Federation. There were bound to be some Second Foundationers that were 1,000 or more parsecs away. Is it likely we would have gotten them all?
And if we failed to get them all, could we say we had won? Could the mule have said it in his time?
He took Terminus, and with it all the worlds it directly controlled, but the independent trading world still stood. He took the trading worlds, yet three fugitives remained, Ebling Miss, Beta Darrell, and her husband. He kept both men under control and left Beta, only Beta, uncontrolled. He did this out of sentiment, if we are to believe Arcady's romance, and that was enough. According to Arcady's account, one person, only Beta, was left to do as she pleased, and because of her actions, the mule was not able to locate the second foundation and was, therefore, defeated. One person left untouched, and all was lost. That's the importance of one person, despite all the legends that surround Selden's plan to the effect that the individual is nothing and the mass is all. And if we left not just one second foundationer behind, but several dozen, as seems perfectly likely, what then? Would they not gather together, rebuild their fortunes, take up their careers again, multiply their numbers by recruitment and training, and once more make us all pawns? Brano said gravely, "Do you believe that?" "I am sure of it." "But tell me, Councilman, why should they bother? Why should the pitiful remnant continue to cling desperately to a duty no one welcomes? What drives them to keep the galaxy along its path to the Second Galactic Empire? And, if the small band insists on fulfilling its mission, why should we care? Why not accept the path of the plan and be thankful that they will see to it that we do not stray or lose our way?" Trevise put his hand over his eyes and rubbed them. Despite his youth, he seemed the more tired of the two. He stared at the mayor and said, "I can't believe you. Are you under the impression that the Second Foundation is doing this for us? That they are some sort of idealists? Isn't it clear to you from your knowledge of politics, of the practical issues of power and manipulation, that they are doing it for themselves? We are the cutting edge. We are the engine, the force. We labor and sweat and bleed and weep. They merely control, adjusting an amplifier here, closing a contact there, and doing it all with ease and without risk to themselves. Then, when it is all done, and when after 1,000 years of heaving and straining, we have set up the Second Galactic Empire, the people of the Second Foundation will move in as the ruling elite." Brano said, "Do you want to eliminate the Second Foundation, then? Having moved halfway to the Second Empire, do you want to take the chance of completing the task on our own and serving as our own elite? Is that it?" "Certainly. Certainly. Shouldn't that be what you want, too? You and I won't live to see it, but you have grandchildren, and someday I may, and they will have grandchildren, and so on. I want them to have the fruit of our labors, and I want them to look back to us as the source and to praise us for what we have accomplished. I don't want it all to fall to a hidden conspiracy devised by Selden, who is no hero of mine. I tell you, he is a greater threat than the mule, if we allow his plan to go through. By the galaxy, I wish the mule had disrupted the plan altogether and forever. We would have survived him. He was one of a kind, and very mortal. The Second Foundation seems to be immortal." "But you would like to destroy the Second Foundation, is that not so?"
"If I knew how."
"Since you don't know how, don't you think it quite likely they will destroy you?"
Trevise looked contemptuous. "I have had the thought that even you might be under their control. Your accurate guess as to what Selden's image would say and your subsequent treatment of me could be all Second Foundation. You could be a hollow shell with a Second Foundation content."
"Then why are you talking to me as you are?"
"Because, if you are under Second Foundation control, I am lost in any case, and I might as well expel some of the anger within me, because, in actual fact, I am gambling that you are not under their control, that you are merely unaware of what you do." Brano said,
"You win that gamble at any rate. I am not under anyone's control but my own. Still, can you be sure I am telling the truth? Were I under control of the Second Foundation, would I admit it? Would I even myself know that I was under their control? But there is no profit in such questions. I believe I am not under control, and you have no choice but to believe it too. Consider this, however. If the Second Foundation exists, it is certain that their biggest need is to make sure that no one in the galaxy knows they exist. The Selden plan only works well if the pawns, we, are not aware of how the plan works and of how we are manipulated. It was because the mule focused the attention of the Foundation on the Second Foundation that the Second Foundation was destroyed in Arcady's time. Or should I say, nearly destroyed, Councilman? From this, we can deduce two corollaries. First, we can reasonably suppose that they interfere grossly as little as they can. We can assume it would be impossible to take us all over. Even the Second Foundation, if it exists, must have limits to its power. To take over some and allow others to guess the fact would introduce distortions to the plan. Consequently, we come to the conclusion that their interference is as delicate, as indirect, as sparse as is possible, and therefore I am not controlled.
nor are you.
Treves said, That is one corollary, and I tend to accept it, out of wishful thinking, perhaps. What is the other?
A simpler and more inevitable one.
If the second foundation exists and wishes to guard the secret of that existence, then one thing is sure. Anyone who thinks it still exists and talks about it and announces it and shouts it to all the galaxy must in some subtle way be removed by them at once, wiped out, done away with. Wouldn't that be your conclusion, too?
Treves said, Is that why you have taken me into custody, Madam Mayor, to protect me from the second foundation?
In a way, to an extent. Leona Cadell's careful recording of your beliefs will be publicized, not only in order to keep the people of Terminus and the Foundation from being unduly disturbed by your silly talk, but to keep the Second Foundation from being disturbed. If it exists, I do not want to have its attention drawn to you.
Imagine that, said Treves with heavy irony. For my sake, for my lovely brown eyes.
Brano stirred and then, quite without warning, laughed quietly. She said, I am not so old, Councilman, that I am not unaware that you have lovely brown eyes. And 30 years ago, that might have been motive enough. At this time, however, I wouldn't move a millimeter to save them, or all the rest of you, if only your eyes were involved. But if the Second Foundation exists, and if their attention is drawn to you, they may not stop with you. There's my life to consider, and that of a number of others far more intelligent and valuable than you, and all the plans we have made.
All? Do you believe the Second Foundation exists, then, that you react so carefully to the possibility of their response?
Brano brought her fist down upon the table before. Of course I do, you consummate fool! If I didn't know the Second Foundation exists, and if I weren't fighting them as hard and as effectively as I could, would I care what you say about such a subject? If the Second Foundation did not exist, would it matter that you are announcing they do? I've wanted for months to shut you up before you went public, but lacked the political power to deal roughly with a councilman. Selden's appearance made me look good and gave me the power, if only temporarily, and at that moment you did go public. I moved at once, and now I will have you killed without a twinge of conscience or a microsecond of hesitation if you don't do exactly as you're told. Our entire conversation now, at an hour in which I would much rather be in bed and asleep, was designed to bring you to the point of believing me when I tell you this. I want you to know that the problem of the Second Foundation, which I was careful to have you outline, gives me reason enough and inclination to have you brain-stopped without trial.
Treves half rose from his seat. Brano said,
Oh, don't make any moves. I'm only an old woman, as you're undoubtedly telling yourself. But before you could place a hand on me, you'd be dead. We are under observation, foolish young man, by my people.
Treves sat down. He said, just a bit shakily, You make no sense. If you believed the Second Foundation existed, you wouldn't be speaking of it so freely. You wouldn't expose yourself to the dangers to which you say I am exposing myself.
You recognize, then, that I have a bit more good sense than you do. In other words, you believe the Second Foundation exists, yet you speak freely about it because you are foolish. I believe it exists, and I speak freely too, but only because I have taken precautions. Since you seem to have read Arcady's history carefully, you may recall that she speaks of her father having invented what she called a mental static device. It serves as a shield to the kind of mental power the Second Foundation has. It still exists, and has been improved on, too, under conditions of the greatest secrecy. This house is, for the moment, reasonably safe against their prying. With that understood, let me tell you what you were to do.
What's that?
You are to find out whether what you and I think is so is indeed so. You are to find out if the Second Foundation still exists, and if so, where. That means you will have to leave Terminus and go I know not where, even though it may in the end turn out, as in Arcady's day, that the Second Foundation exists among us. It means you will not return till you have something to tell us, and if you have nothing to tell us, you will never return, and the population of Terminus will be less one fool.
Treves found himself stammering. How on Terminus can I look for them without giving away the fact? They will simply arrange a death for me, and you will be none the wiser.
Then don't look for them, you naive child. Look for something else. Look for something else with all your heart and mind, and if in the process you come across them because they have not bothered to pay you any attention, then good. You may in that case send us the information by shielded and coded hyperwave, and you may then return as a reward.
I suppose you have something in mind that I should look for?
Of course I do. Do you know Janov Pellaret?
Never heard of him.
You will meet him tomorrow. He will tell you what you are looking for, and he will leave with you in one of our most advanced ships. There will be just the two of you, for two are quite enough to risk.
And if you ever try to return without satisfying us that you have the knowledge we want, then you will be blown out of space before you come within a parsec of Terminus. That's all. This conversation is over.
She arose, looked at her bare hands, then slowly drew on her gloves. She turned toward the door, and through it came two guards, weapons in hand. They stepped apart to let her pass. At the doorway she turned.
There are other guards outside. Do nothing that disturbs them, or you will save us all the trouble of your existence.
You will also then lose the benefits I might bring you, said Trevise, and with an effort he managed to say it lightly.
We'll chance that,
said Brano, with an unamused smile. 8. Outside, Leona Cadell was waiting for her. He said, I listened to the whole thing, Mayor. You were extraordinarily patient.
And I am extraordinarily tired. I think the day has been 72 hours long. You take over now.
I will, but tell me, was there really a mental static device about the house?
Oh, Cadell, said Brano wearily, you know better than that. What was the chance anyone was watching? Do you imagine the Second Foundation is watching everything, everywhere, always? I'm not the romantic young Trevise is. He might think that, but I don't. And even if that were the case, if Second Foundational eyes and ears were everywhere, would not the presence of an MSD have given us away at once? For that matter, would not its use have shown the Second Foundation a shield against its powers existed, once they detected a region that was mentally opaque? Isn't the secret of such a shield's existence, until we are quite ready to use it to the full, something worth not only more than Trevise, but more than you and I together? And yet... They were in the ground car with Cadell driving.
And yet, said Cadell.
And yet what?
Said Brenner.
Oh, yes. And yet that young man is intelligent. I called him a fool in various ways half a dozen times just to keep him in his place, but he isn't one. He's young, and he's read too many of Arcade Durell's novels, and they have made him think that that's the way the galaxy is. But he has a quick insight about him, and it will be a pity to lose him.
You are sure, then, that he will be lost?
Quite sure, said Brano sadly. Just the same, it is better that way. We don't need young romantics charging about blindly and smashing in an instant perhaps what it has taken us years to build. Besides, he will serve a purpose. He will surely attract the attention of the Second Foundationers, always assuming they exist and are indeed concerning themselves with us. And while they are attracted to him, they will, perchance, ignore us. Perhaps we can gain even more than the good fortune of being ignored. They may, we can hope, unwittingly give themselves away to us in their concern with Trevise, and let us have an opportunity and time to devise countermeasures.
Trevise, then, draws the lightning.
Brano's lips twitched. Ah, the metaphor I've been looking for. He is our lightning rod, absorbing the stroke and protecting us from harm.
And this Pellerat, who will also be in the path of the lightning bolt?
He may suffer, too. That can't be helped.
Cadell nodded. Well, you know what Salvar Hardin used to say. Never let your sense of morals keep you from doing what is right.
At the moment, I haven't got a sense of morals, muttered Brano. I have a sense of bone weariness. Yet, I could name a number of people I would sooner lose than Golan Trevise. He is a handsome young man. And, of course, he knows it.
Her last words slurred as she closed her eyes and fell into a light sleep. Chapter 3. Historian. 9.
Chernov Pellerat was white-haired, and his face in repose looked rather empty. It was rarely in anything but repose. He was of average height and weight, and tended to move without haste and to speak with deliberation. He seemed considerably older than his 52 years. He had never left Terminus, something that was most unusual, especially for one of his profession. He himself wasn't sure whether his sedentary ways were because of, or in spite of, his obsession with history. The obsession had come upon him quite suddenly at the age of 15, when, during some indisposition, he was given a book of early legends. In it, he found the repeated motif of a world that was alone and isolated, a world it was not even aware of its isolation, since it had never known anything else. His indisposition began to clear up at once. Within 2 days, he had read the book 3 times and was out of bed. The day after that, he was at his computer terminal checking for any records that the Terminus University Library might have on similar legends. It was precisely such legends that had occupied him ever since. The Terminus University Library had by no means been a great resource in this respect, but when he grew older, he discovered the joys of interlibrary loans. He had printouts in his possession which had been taken off hyper-radiational signals from as far away as Ifnia. He had become a professor of ancient history and was now beginning his first sabbatical, one for which he had applied with the idea of taking a trip through space, his first, to Trantor itself, 37 years later. Pellerat was quite aware that it was most unusual for a person of Terminus to have never been in space. It had never been his intention to be notable in this particular way. It was just that whenever he might have gone into space, some new book, some new study, some new analysis came his way. He would delay his projected trip until he had wrung the new matter dry, and had added, if possible, one more item of fact or speculation or imagination to the mountain he had collected. In the end, his only regret was that the particular trip to Trantor had never been made. Trantor had been the capital of the First Galactic Empire. It had been the seat of emperors for 12,000 years, and before that, the capital of one of the most important pre-imperial kingdoms, which had little by little captured or otherwise absorbed the other kingdoms to establish the empire. Trantor had been a world-girdling city, a metal-coated city. Pellerat had read of it in the works of Gale Dornick, who had visited it in the time of Harry Seldon himself. Dornick's volume no longer circulated, and the one Pellerat owned might have been sold for half the historian's annual salary. A suggestion that he might part with it would have horrified the historian. Of course, what Pellerat cared about as far as Trantor was concerned was the Galactic Library, which in Imperial times, when it was the Imperial Library, had been the largest in the galaxy. Trantor was the capital of the largest and most populous empire humanity had ever seen. It had been a single worldwide city with a population well in excess of 40 billion, and its library had been the gathered record of all the creative and not-so-creative work of humanity, the full summary of its knowledge. And it was all computerized in so complex a manner that it took experts to handle the computers. What was more, the library had survived. To Pellerat, that was the amazing thing about it. When Trantor had fallen and been sacked nearly 2.5 centuries before, it had undergone appalling destruction, and the tales of human misery and death would not bear repeating. Yet the library had survived, protected, it was said, by the university students, who used ingeniously devised weapons. Some thought the defense by the students might well have been thoroughly romanticized. In any case, the library had endured through the period of devastation. Ebling Miss had done his work in an intact library in a ruined world when he had almost located the second foundation. According to the story which the people of the foundation still believed, but which historians have always treated with reserve. The three generations of Durrells, Beta, Torin, and Arkady, had each at one time or another been on Trantor. However, Arkady had not visited the library, and since her time, the library had not impinged on galactic history. No foundationer had been on Trantor in 120 years, but there was no reason to believe the library was not still there. That it had made no impingement was the surest evidence in favor of its being there. Its destruction would surely have made a noise. The library was outmoded and archaic. It had been so even in Ebling Miss's time, but that was all to the good. Pellerat always rubbed his hands with excitement when he thought of an old and outmoded library. The older and the more outmoded, the more likely it was to have what he needed. In his dreams, he would enter the library and ask in breathless alarm, "Has the library been modernized? Have you thrown out the old tapes and computerizations?" And always he imagined the answer from dusty and ancient librarians, "As it has been, Professor, so is it still." And now his dream would come true. The mayor herself had assured him of that. How she had known of his work, he wasn't quite sure. He had not succeeded in publishing many papers. Little of what he had done was solid enough to be acceptable for publication, and what had appeared had left no mark. Still, they said Brano the Bronze knew all that went on in Terminus and had eyes at the end of every finger and toe. Pellerat could almost believe it, but if she knew of his work, why on Terminus didn't she see its importance and give him a little financial support before this? Somehow, he thought, with as much bitterness as he could generate, the Foundation had its eyes fixed firmly on the future. It was the Second Empire and their destiny that absorbed them. They had no time, no desire to peer back into the past, and they were irritated by those who did. The more fools they, of course, but he could not single-handedly wipe out folly, and it might be better so. He could hug the great pursuit to his own chest, and the day would come when he would be remembered as the great pioneer of the important. That meant, of course, and he was too intellectually honest to refuse to perceive it, that he too was absorbed in the future, a future in which he would be recognized, and in which he would be a hero on a par with Harry Seldon. In fact, he would be the greater,
For how could the working out of a clearly visualized future a millennium long stand comparison with the working out of a lost past at least 25 millennia old? And this was the day. This was the day. The mayor had said it would be the day after Selden's image made its appearance. That was the only reason Pellerat had been interested in the Selden crisis that for months had occupied every mind on Terminus, and indeed almost every mind in the Federation. It had seemed to him to make the most trifling difference as to whether the capital of the Foundation had remained here at Terminus or had been shifted somewhere else. And now that the crisis had been resolved, he remained unsure as to which side of the matter Harry Selden had championed, or if the matter under dispute had been mentioned at all. It was enough that Selden had appeared, and that now this was the day. It was a little after 2 in the afternoon that a ground car slid to a halt in the driveway of his somewhat isolated house just outside Terminus proper. A rear door slid back. A guard, in the uniform of the Mayoralty Security Corps, stepped out. Then a young man, then 2 more guards. Pellerat was impressed despite himself. The mayor not only knew of his work, but clearly considered it of the highest importance. The person who was to be his companion was given an honor guard, and he had been promised a first-class vessel, which his companion would be able to pilot. Most flattering. Pellerat's housekeeper opened the door. The young man entered, and the 2 guards positioned themselves on either side of the entrance. Through the window, Pellerat saw that the 3rd guard remained outside, and that a 2nd ground car had now pulled up. Additional guards. Confusing. He turned to find the young man in his room, and was surprised to find that he recognized him. He had seen him on holocasts. He said, "You're that councilman. You're Treviz." "Golan Treviz, that's right. You are Professor Genoff Pellerat?"
"Yes, yes," said Pellerat. "Are you he who will..."
"We are going to be fellow travelers," said Treviz woodenly, "or so I've been told."
"But you're not a historian."
"No, I'm not. As you said, I'm a councilman, a politician."
"Yes, yes. But what am I thinking about? I am a historian. Therefore, what need for another? You can pilot a spaceship."
"Yes, I'm pretty good at that."
"Well, that's what we need, then." "Excellent. I'm afraid I'm not one of your practical thinkers, young man. So if it should happen that you are, we'll make a good team."
Therese said, "I am not at the moment overwhelmed with the excellence of my own thinking, but it seems we have no choice but to try to make it a good team."
"Let's hope, then, that I can overcome my uncertainty about space. I've never been in space, you know, Councilman. I'm a groundhog, if that's the term. Would you like a glass of tea, by the way? I'll have Clodagh prepare us something. It is my understanding that it will be some hours before we leave, after all. I am prepared right now, however. I have what is necessary for both of us. The mayor has been most cooperative. Astonishing, her interest in the project."
Treviz said, "You've known about this, then. How long?"
"Well, the mayor approached me..."
Here Pellerat frowned slightly and seemed to be making certain calculations.
2 or maybe 3 weeks ago. I was delighted. And now that I have got it clear in my head that I need a pilot and not a 2nd historian, I am also delighted that my companion will be you, my dear fellow."
2, maybe 3 weeks ago," repeated Treviz, sounding a little dazed. "She was prepared all this time, then, and I..." He faded out.
"Pardon me?"
"Nothing, Professor. I have a bad habit of muttering to myself. It is something you will have to grow accustomed to if our trip extends itself."
It will, said Pellerat,
bustling the other to the dining room table, where an elaborate tea was being prepared by his housekeeper.
"Quite open-ended. The mayor said we were to take as long as we liked, and that the galaxy lay all before us, and indeed that wherever we went we could call upon Foundation funds. She said, of course, that we would have to be reasonable. I promised that much."
He chuckled and rubbed his hands. "Sit down, my good fellow, sit down. This may be our last meal on Terminus for a very long time." Treviz sat down. He said, "Do you have a family, Professor?"
"I have a son. He's on the faculty at Santana University. A chemist, I believe, or something like that. He took after his mother's side. She hasn't been with me for a long time. So, you see, I have no responsibilities, no active hostages to fortune. I trust you have none. Help yourself to the sandwiches, my boy."
"No hostages at the moment. A few women, they come and go."
"Yes, yes. Delightful when it works out. Even more delightful when you find it need not be taken seriously. No children, I take it?"
"None."
"Good. You know, I'm in the most remarkable good humor. I was taken aback when you first came in, I admit it. But I find you quite exhilarating now. What I need is youth and enthusiasm and someone who can find his way about the galaxy. We're on a search, you know. A remarkable search."
Pellerat's quiet face and quiet voice achieved an unusual animation without any particular change in either expression or intonation. I wonder if you have been told about this.
Trevise's eyes narrowed.
A remarkable search.
Yes, indeed. A pearl of great price is hidden among the tens of millions of inhabited worlds in the galaxy, and we have nothing but the faintest clues to guide us. Just the same, it will be an incredible prize if we can find it. If you and I can carry it off, my boy, Trevise, I should say, for I don't mean to patronize, our names will ring down the ages to the end of time.
The prize you speak of, this pearl of great price.
I sound like Arkady Durell, the writer, you know, speaking of the second foundation, don't I? No wonder you look astonished.
Pellerat leaned his head back as though he were going to break into loud laughter, but he merely smiled.
Nothing so silly and unimportant, I assure you.
Trevise said, If you are not speaking of the second foundation, Professor, what are you speaking of?
Pellerat was suddenly grave, even apologetic.
Ah, then the mayor has not told you. It is odd, you know. I've spent decades resenting the government and its inability to understand what I'm doing, and now Mayor Brano is being remarkably generous.
Yes, said Trevise, not trying to conceal an intonation of irony. She is a woman of remarkable hidden philanthropy, but she has not told me what this is all about.
You are not aware of my research, then?
No, I'm sorry.
No need to excuse yourself. Perfectly all right. I have not exactly made a splash.
Then let me tell you. You and I are going to search for and find, for I have an excellent possibility in mind, Earth.
10. Trevise did not sleep well that night. Over and over he thrashed about the prison that the old woman had built around him. Nowhere could he find a way out. He was being driven into exile, and he could do nothing about it. She had been calmly inexorable, and did not even take the trouble to mask the unconstitutionality of it all. He had relied on his rights as a councilman and as a citizen of the Federation, and she hadn't even paid them lip service. And now this Pellerat, this odd academic who seemed to be located in the world without being part of it, told him that the fearsome old woman had been making arrangements for this for weeks. He felt like the boy that she had called him. He was to be exiled with a historian who kept dear-fellowing him and who seemed to be in a noiseless fit of joy over beginning a galactic search for Earth? What in the name of the mule's grandmother was Earth? He had asked. Of course, he had asked upon the moment of its mention. He had said, Pardon me, Professor. I'm ignorant of your specialty, and I trust you won't be annoyed if I ask for an explanation in simple terms. What is Earth?
Pellerat stared at him gravely while 20 seconds moved slowly past. He said,
It's a planet. The original planet. The one on which human beings first appeared, my dear fellow.
Trevise stared. First appeared from where?
From nowhere. It's the planet on which humanity developed through evolutionary processes from lower animals.
Trevise thought about it, then shook his head.
I don't know what you mean.
An annoyed expression crossed Pellerat's face briefly. He cleared his throat and said,
There was a time when Terminus had no human beings upon it. It was settled by human beings from other worlds. You know that, I suppose.
Yes, of course, said Trevise impatiently. He was irritated at the other's sudden assumption of pedagogy.
Very well. This is true of all the other worlds. Anacreon, Santani, Kalgan, all of them. They were all, at some time in the past, founded. People arrived there from other worlds. It's true even of Trantor. It may have been a great metropolis for 20,000 years, but before that it wasn't.
Why, what was it before that?
Empty. At least of human beings.
That's hard to believe.
It's true. The old records show it.
Where did the people come from who first settled Trantor?
No one is certain. There are hundreds of planets which claim to have been populated in the dim mists of antiquity, and whose peoples present fanciful tales about the nature of the first arrival of humanity. Historians tend to dismiss such things and to brood over the origin question.
What is that? I have never heard of it.
That doesn't surprise me. It's not a popular historical problem now, I admit. But there was a time during the decay of the Empire when it roused a certain interest among intellectuals. Salvar Hardin mentions it briefly in his memoirs. It's the question of the identity and location of the one planet from which it all started. If we look backward in time, humanity flows inward from the most recently established worlds to older ones, to still older ones, until all concentrates on one, the original.
Trevise thought at once of the obvious flaw in the argument. Might there not have been a large number of originals?
Of course not. All human beings all over the galaxy are of a single species. A single species cannot originate on more than one planet. Quite impossible.
How do you know?
In the first place,
Pellerat ticked off the first finger of his left hand with the first finger of his right, and then seemed to think better of what would undoubtedly have been a long and intricate exposition. He put both hands at his side and said with great earnestness,
"My dear fellow, I give you my word of honor."
Trevise bowed formally and said, "I would not dream of doubting it, Professor Pellerat. Let us say, then, that there is one planet of origin. But might there not be hundreds who lay claim to the honor?"
"Not only might be, there are. Yet every claim is without merit. Not one of those hundreds that aspire to the credit of priority shows any trace of a pre-hyperspatial society, let alone any trace of human evolution from pre-human organisms."
"Then you are saying that there is a planet of origin, but that for some reason it is not making the claim."
"You have hit it precisely.
And you are going to search for it."
"We are. That is our mission. Mayor Breno has arranged it all. You will pilot our ship to Trantor."
"To Trantor? It's not the planet of origin. You said that much a while ago."
"Of course Trantor isn't. Earth is."
"Then why aren't you telling me to pilot the ship to Earth?"
"I'm not making myself clear. Earth is a legendary name. It is enshrined in ancient myths. It has no meaning we can be certain of, but it is convenient to use the word as a one-syllable synonym for the planet of origin of the human species. Just which planet in real space is the one we are defining as Earth is not known."
"Will they know on Trantor?"
"I hope to find information there, certainly. Trantor possesses the Galactic Library, the greatest in the system."
"Well, surely that library has been searched by those people you said were interested in the origin question in the time of the First Empire."
Pellerat nodded thoughtfully. "Yes, but perhaps not well enough. I have learned a great deal about the origin question that perhaps the Imperials of 5 centuries back did not know. I might search the old records with greater understanding, you see. I have been thinking about this for a long time, and I have an excellent possibility in mind."
"You have told Mayor Brano all this, I imagine, and she approves?"
"Approves? My dear fellow, she was ecstatic. She told me that Trantor was surely the place to find out all I needed to know."
"No doubt," muttered Trevise. That was part of what occupied him that night. Mayor Brano was sending him out to find out what he could about the Second Foundation. She was sending him with Pellerat so that he might mask his real aim with the pretended search for Earth, a search that could carry him anywhere in the galaxy. It was a perfect cover, in fact, and he admired the mayor's ingenuity. But Trantor? Where was the sense in that? Once they were on Trantor, Pellerat would find his way into the Galactic Library and would never emerge. With endless stacks of books, films, and recordings, with innumerable computerizations and symbolic representations, he would surely never want